Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
In the last episode, we left off with George DeMorenshiel stopping by unannounced at Lee and Marina Oswald's apartment so that he could introduce himself. The question of what spurred this introduction remains widely disputed. There's some evidence that DeMorenshiel just wanted to help a young family from Russia with financial problems, but there's also evidence that he was asked to meet Oswald by J. Walton Moore of the CIA. Now, the extent of George DeMorenshiel's CIA connections may be disputed, but the fact that he had them is not. In this episode, we continue looking at Lee Harvey Oswald's life in Dallas in late 1962 and early 1963, including his map-making job at Jagger Childs Stovall, whether Lee physically abused Marina, the 1962 Thanksgiving reunion of Lee and his half-brother John Pick, and the introduction of the Oswalds to Ruth Payne.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed questioning the man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? The commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Oswald moved from Fort Worth to Dallas on October 9th, 1962, probably because he believed that there may be better job prospects there. On the same day, he rented Post Office Box 2915 at the Dallas Post Office. This is the P.O. box where the Warren Commission says Oswald had the infamous Mannlicher Carcano rifle shipped. We covered the details of Oswald's alleged rifle ownership and the transaction in Episode 7. On the next day, October 10th, Oswald met with Helen Cunningham at the Texas Employment Commission. She then reviewed the file that was sent over from the Fort Worth Employment Commission. Oswald had previously applied there in Fort Worth to get his job at Leslie Welding, where he worked for about 4 months. Now, that same file that Cunningham was looking at is in the Warren Commission volumes as Cunningham Exhibit 1. And on that document, it lists the employment aptitude tests that were taken by Oswald in Fort Worth. Mysteriously, the notation on the file says that Oswald took these tests in April of 1962. But that date can't possibly be correct, since Oswald was still in the Soviet Union at that time. If you're keeping score at home, this is one more instance of an inconsistency in the records when it comes to Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, was that date just written down wrong, or is there more to it? And why does this keep happening? On October 12, 1962, Oswald applied for a job as a photo print trainee with Jaggers, Childs, Stovall, or JCS. JCS did local commercial printing and developing work, but they also handled top-secret projects for the Navy and the Army Mapping Service. Specifically, JCS set the type for the maps of foreign countries, including Cuba. Not only did JCS do work on Cuba, Oswald himself did work on Cuba on behalf of the Army Mapping Service, according to his time cards. This is especially interesting given that the Cuban Missile Crisis began on October 16th, 4 days before Oswald started, and it went until October 29th. So for the entirety of the Cuban Missile Crisis, Lee Harvey Oswald is working at a map-making company that does work for the Army and Navy related to Cuba. And this was true even though Oswald spoke Russian, brought Russian newspapers to work, and let his co-workers know about his sympathies when it came to Cuba. It is surprising that the FBI and CIA did nothing to stop a former defector to the Soviet Union who previously threatened to share state secrets from working at a map-making company for the Army during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Whether the agencies were silent because they weren't worried about Oswald, or whether the agencies were just negligent, this scenario does not inspire confidence in the intelligence agencies when it comes to keeping threats away from sensitive information. It's not exactly clear how Oswald got this job at JCS, but we do have a pretty good idea. When he visited the employment office looking for better jobs, the counseling card from his meeting with Helen Cunningham noted the position that Oswald ultimately took at JCS. Cunningham wrote at the bottom of the counseling card that Oswald had been referred to her by personal friends, Teofil and Anna Meller, who were active members of the Dallas White Russian community. Katya Ford, another one of the White Russians who knew the Oswalds, told the Warren Commission that George Beau or Teofil Meller found Oswald the job at JCS. Peter Paul Gregory told the Secret Service that Beau found Oswald the job at JCS. We don't really know if finding Oswald the job means getting him that specific job, or just referring him to Helen Cunningham so that he could get some sort of job. It looks most likely that the Employment Commission had the JCS job listing, and Cunningham simply gave that option to Oswald after her friends referred him to the Employment Commission. In Oswald's address book, alongside the address and phone number for JCS, it says, quote, "Topography, micro dot." Oswald had a co-worker who knew how to speak some Russian. His name was Dennis Ofstein. When Ofstein spoke to the Warren Commission, he told them that Oswald explained to him what a micro dot was. Ofstein said, quote, "He asked me one day if I knew the term micro dot, and I told him no, I wasn't familiar with it, and he told me that that was the method of taking a large area of type or a picture and reducing it down to an extremely small size. And he said that is the way spies sometimes sent messages and pictures of diagrams and so on. They would take a micro dot photograph and place it under a stamp and send it. I presumed that he either read this in a book or had knowledge of it from somewhere, but where, I didn't know." I couldn't find any evidence that JCS actually did any work that was related to microdots. Ofstein goes on to tell the Warren Commission that Oswald never mentioned anything about Marxism and that he didn't take issue when Ofstein said derogatory things about Fidel Castro. Oswald told Ofstein about his travels in the Soviet Union. Ofstein said to the commission, quote, "I got the impression that possibly he had been an agent, which was a fleeting impression." Ofstein thought Oswald was an agent because he shared details with Ofstein about Soviet military positions around Minsk, which made Ofstein wonder why Oswald was paying such close attention to those details. Lee's job at JCS, in conjunction with the note in his address book about microdots and the commission testimony of Dennis Ofstein, are often used to say that Oswald had a high-level security clearance, which means that he must have had intelligence connections. Yes, I do think it's weird that he was potentially working on maps of Cuba and that he was at JCS during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But we have a clear paper trail for Oswald getting this job coming from the Texas Employment Commission. I don't see any guiding hand of some third party putting Oswald in place at JCS. This is another scenario where it's possible that there is something going on behind the scenes, but there's just not enough evidence to state definitively that Oswald was working at JCS for any reason other than to make money to support his family. Eventually, on April 6, 1963, Oswald lost his job at JCS due to poor performance and because he couldn't get along with his peers, partially because he would bring in Russian language newspapers to read, which didn't go over well with fellow employees after the Cuban Missile Crisis. A recurring theme in popular books defending the Warren Report's finding that Oswald acted alone is that Oswald was beating his wife, Marina. If this is true, it also serves to take away any sympathy one might have for Oswald, even if he really was just a patsy. But then again, it's possible that Oswald was a patsy and that he also beat his wife. We have multiple witnesses to support the idea that Lee hit Marina on several occasions. According to Priscilla McMillan, who wrote her book with Marina Oswald, Lee slapped Marina in the face for the first time after they had an argument on June 24th, 1962. Later, in the fall of 1962, George de Morenschild told his daughter, Alexandra, that she should meet the Oswalds. So Alexandra and her husband then arranged to visit with the Oswalds, her dad, George de Morenschild, and George Beau. It's during this visit that Marina first complains to others that Oswald has been hitting her. She then moves in with white Russian Elena Hall, who had previously helped Marina get the dental work that she needed but couldn't afford. Hall let Marina and her baby June stay at her house for a few days. It's also true that the physical abuse went both ways. Marina hit Lee on several occasions, too. Jean de Morenschild once saw a cigarette burn on Marina's shoulder that Marina said came from Lee. Jean asked Lee why he did such a terrible thing to his wife, and he said, quote, "Well, she smoked against my orders, but she enjoys brutality. Look at me, I'm all scratched up. Man, that woman loves to fight." Warren Report critics have argued that Marina was trying to get Lee to hit her and that she was provoking him by hitting him and by smoking, which she knew that he hated. They say that her purpose in doing this would be to easily get a divorce after people saw her with bruises. This is also consistent with the warning that Thomas Kassassin of the CIA tried to give Oswald about the Soviet honeypot program where Soviet women were marrying foreigners only to divorce them in their home countries once they got back and attained legal status. But to me, this argument feels a lot like the old argument of the drunk abuser who says, "Look what you made me do." There's no excusing Lee Harvey Oswald's physical violence against Marina, regardless of what she did to him. On the other hand, aside from Marina, none of the white Russians who were interviewed by the Warren Commission ever actually saw Oswald hit Marina. Their testimony was always secondhand as to the abuse, although several of them did say that they saw Marina with bruises. There's one person, Alexandra Kleinlehrer, who provided an affidavit saying that he actually saw Lee hit Marina once. But for whatever reason, Kleinlehrer was never interviewed by the Warren Commission. We also know that none of the white Russians ever contacted the police to let them know about this allegedly recurring domestic violence. In my view, the evidence shows that Oswald very likely did hit Marina and put out a lit cigarette on her skin. But it's quite possible that the white Russians who testified to the Warren Commission about secondhand knowledge probably exaggerated the extent of the abuse. Ultimately, on November 3rd, Marina and June moved back in with Lee to his new apartment in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas at 604 Elsbeth Street. 3 days later, Marina spoke to the landlord of the apartment, Mrs. Tobias, and her friend, Mrs. Jurek. Mrs. Tobias introduced Mrs. Jurek to Marina by saying that the Oswalds were from Czechoslovakia. Jurek then spoke Czech and asked Marina to say something to her in Czech. This is when Marina told the women in English, quote, "No, we're not Czech. We're Russian. But my husband doesn't want us to say that because people will be mean to us." Mr. Tobias also heard Marina speak English. He told the Warren Commission, quote, "She knew more English than she let on. She would come over there and sit, and the wife would talk to her in English." When Lee found out about Marina's interaction with the landlord and her friend, he was mad at Marina for speaking to them, which resulted in another argument, with Marina and baby June once again leaving the apartment that they had just moved back into. Marina called her friend and white Russian Anna Meller, the same one who referred Lee to the job at JCS, and asked her to come pick them up so that she could stay at Anna's house. A few days later, on November 11th, Marina and June left the Meller home and moved in with Katya Ford in Dallas. Katya confirmed to the Warren Commission that she did see bruises on Marina's face when she arrived at the house. Now, as a quick sidebar, Katya Ford also told the FBI that Marina said Lee Oswald was sent to Russia because he worked for Rand Corporation and helped set up the American exhibit at the World Trade Exposition in Moscow. This is a big deal because it basically confirms that Marina did meet Robert Webster in the Soviet Union. How else could she make up a story about meeting Lee that was actually the exact story of how Robert Webster says he met her? It sounds like Marina was confusing American defector Robert Webster with American defector Lee Harvey Oswald. About a week after Marina and June moved in with Katya Ford, Marina once again reconciled with Lee, and she and June moved back in to the apartment at Elsbeth. By late 1962, most of the white Russians, with the exception of George de Morenschild, were no longer on good terms with the Oswalds because of Lee's treatment of Marina and because Marina refused to leave Lee and kept coming back to him. Hey everybody, Matt Crumpton here. When I'm not researching, writing, or recording, one of my favorite ways to relax is with federally legal THC from Mood.com. This stuff doesn't come from a lab. It's pesticide-free and grown on American farms. You can get 20% off your first order using the code JFK. One of my go-tos is the functional gummies from Mood.com. These gummies only take 15 minutes to feel the effects, and you can choose all kinds of different moods, from creativity to pain relief to just plain old relaxation. Everything comes right to your door and is discreetly labeled. Best of all, not only is every mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you also get 20% off of your first order using code JFK. So head on over to mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Remember, use code JFK for a 20% discount.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Lee Harvey Oswald had not seen his half-brother, John Pick, in over 10 years when Pick and his family attended Thanksgiving dinner at Robert Oswald's house on November 22, 1962, exactly 1 year before the assassination of President Kennedy. Robert invited Marina, Lee, and June, along with John Pick and his family. Pick had just transferred from Japan to an Air Force base just a few hours south near San Antonio. This Thanksgiving dinner would be the last time that John Pick would ever see his half-brother Lee. Pick's testimony to the Warren Commission about this Thanksgiving dinner is revealing and has fueled much speculation about exactly what he meant. Here's the relevant exchange. Warren Commission: how did Oswald look to you physically as compared with when you had seen him last? Pick: I would have never recognized him, sir. He was much thinner than I remembered him. He didn't have as much hair. His face features were somewhat different, being his eyes were set back, maybe. You know, like in these army pictures, they look different than I remembered him. His face was rounder. My cousin Marilyn Moret described him to me when he went in the Marine Corps as having a bull neck. This I didn't notice at all. Another thing that stood out to Pick was that Lee introduced Pick to White Russian Peter Gregory as Lee's half-brother. Gregory met Pick when he showed up to give the Oswalds a ride home from Thanksgiving dinner after Lee called him to come get them from Robert's house. Pick says that he and Lee had always considered themselves brothers and never once referred to themselves as half-brothers. The fact that Lee introduced him that way irritated Pick. Probably the most often cited line from John Pick's Warren Commission testimony is, quote, "The Lee Harvey Oswald that I met in November of 1962 was not the Lee Harvey Oswald I had known 10 years previous." When you look at that quote, it sounds like Pick is literally saying that this was a different person. But Pick also invited Oswald to come visit him in San Antonio, and Oswald, who wrote his name as Harvey, also gave Pick his address. I don't believe Pick would invite Oswald to come visit him and his family if he thought that he was an imposter. Maybe Pick wanted to try to gather more information about the man before making a conclusion. Who knows? The John Pick testimony can be viewed as Pick genuinely just not recognizing his half-brother after 10 years. It does make sense that a 13-year-old would look a lot different from a 23-year-old. And maybe that difference would be so much that it wouldn't even look like the same person. But it's also true that if there is some elaborate scenario with two Oswalds, then the testimony from John Pick is central to uncovering that plot. We know that something's going on with an Oswald imposter, given the numerous impersonations of Oswald and records showing up with him in two places at the same time. Researcher John Armstrong reached out to John Pick in the 1990s, but Pick refused to speak to Armstrong in depth and told him, quote, "I said everything I had to say about it to the Warren Commission." While I am leaning towards John Pick not actually believing that the person he had Thanksgiving dinner with was a different person from his half-brother, it's also hard to ignore that the Warren Commission immediately shut down John Pick's interview right after he gave the show-stopping statement that it was a different person. So I am keeping an open mind on what John Pick's testimony actually means. Lee Oswald was on the outs with the White Russian community in Dallas during Christmas of 1962 because of his abuse of Marina. 3 days after Christmas, Katya Ford, the woman Marina and June had previously stayed with, had a Christmas party at her house that was attended by about 20 people, almost all of whom were native Russian speakers. Notably, 7 of the attendees at that party were asked to testify before the Warren Commission. All of them said that Oswald had surprisingly excellent command of the Russian language, which is incongruent with the idea that he didn't speak much Russian, if any, when he was in the Soviet Union. On February 22, 1963, Marina and Lee were invited by George de Morenschild to come watch some home movies of him walking through Latin America. This time, George de Morenschild's home movie Show and Tell was held at a party at the home of Everett Glover. There were several other guests at the party. Most notably, Glover invited Ruth Payne, who he had met through the local Unitarian Church. We'll be talking about Ruth Payne a lot over the next few episodes. Everett Glover knew that Ruth Payne studied Russian and may have an interest in interacting with people who were Russian speakers and had just been to Russia, like the Oswalds. Payne studied Russian for 3 years at the University of Pennsylvania. She then went to Middlebury College in Vermont and graduated from Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Incidentally, the same college whose alumna represented 3 of 30 graduating students 1 year at Albert Schweitzer College. According to de Morenschild and Ruth Payne, it's at this 1963 party where Payne is first introduced to the Oswalds. Everett Glover had met the de Morenschilds when he was ice skating. All three of them were members of the Dallas Figure Skating Club in the late 1950s and also frequently played tennis together in 1962 and 63. Now, during this party at Glover's house, Ruth Payne asked Marina for her address so that she could build her skills talking to Marina in modern Russian. When the Warren Commission asked Payne why she got Marina's address that night, she told them, quote, "She is very hard to find, a person speaking modern Russian, and in fact, I know of no other, and this was an opportunity for me to again practice in the language, a rather unusual opportunity, and I was interested in meeting her and getting to know her." As you may recall, Marina Oswald and her children lived with Ruth Payne at the time of the assassination in November of 1963, 9 months after this party at Everett Glover's house. There's also a lot of evidence that looks bad for Oswald that comes solely from Ruth Payne. So if Oswald didn't act alone, or if he was being set up as a patsy, Ruth Payne is a prime suspect for being involved in some way. On the other hand, if Oswald did act alone, then Ruth Payne is a nice old lady who just happened to have a crazy brush with history. We'll come back later to Ruth Payne's developing relationship with the Oswalds, in particular, Marina. Warren Report critics look at this Everett Glover party with suspicion because George de Morenschild and Ruth Payne are such pivotal characters in the story of Lee Harvey Oswald. We know that de Morenschild had ties to the CIA through his numerous meetings, including dinners at his home with J. Walton Moore. We also know that de Morenschild said that he met the Oswalds at the request of J. Walton Moore in exchange for an oil contract in Haiti. But the idea that de Morenschild is the one who connected the Oswalds to Ruth Payne is somewhat undercut by de Morenschild's Warren Commission testimony, where he says that he didn't know Ruth Payne before Everett Glover's party. The party at Glover's house was one of the last times that de Morenschild would ever see the Oswalds. The very last time was around Easter of 1963. After that, the de Morenschilds moved to Haiti to work on the oil contract that he had finally been awarded. At the same time that the Oswalds stopped hanging out with the de Morenschilds, the White Russians' pity of the family was seeming to run out. And it's at this time, in the weeks after the party at Everett Glover's house, that Ruth Payne, nefariously or not, pursues a relationship with Marina, ostensibly to become a better Russian speaker. Warren Report critics see this period of time as a handoff of responsibility for keeping an eye on the Oswalds from George de Morenschild to Ruth Payne. So the Everett Glover party was either a big nothing burger or, for many Warren Report critics, it's an intentionally designed meeting to give Payne the chance to get to know Marina. Looking at the surface level information, it's very plausible that this was all just an innocent get together. The question is whether there is more beneath the surface. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll continue following the Oswalds as they transition from their closest friendship being with George de Morenschild to a new relationship with Ruth and Michael Payne. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.